Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. Happy Monday. It's the best day of the week. It's the beginning of the week. Ari Wasserman is here. Max Olson is here. We got yelled at on Twitter all weekend. At least Ari and I did. Max was an innocent bystander.
I stayed off Twitter. I'm good.
A listener to the SEC job rankings episode. Ari, the Texas fans, not happy with where we put them in their new conference.
You know what the problem is, Andy? They didn't have a hero. Like, once I'm out, there's nobody to talk on their behalf. So
well, and the fact that you dropped them for the Aggies, like, you essentially threw Texas in the trash and put on a maroon cape.
You have to know, though. Everybody has to know. The Aggies over the Longhorns would have happened regardless, I think. Like, I am very high on Texas A&M right now.
Of course you are, because they have a high recruiting ranking. They recruit well. They're in an area where they should be able to get a bunch of recruits. They have tons of money. They are everything you want in a school.
And they have a coach that's actually won a national title. And I know it was in a previous system, but that still counts. Like, there's a coach that has proven that they can win at the highest level. It might have been at a different place, but I think you can make the case that College Station, Texas is more advantageously situated from a geographical standpoint.
You just made their heads explode. I'm
than
sorry.
Florida State.
I'm going to play the part of Ari right now. This is the part where Ari says it's way better to live in Laguna Niguel or wherever. Whatever part of the west side of Los Angeles County that Lincoln Riley's living on than Norman, Oklahoma. Austin's a better town than College Station.
No, he was saying compared to
Florida State.
I say that as someone who loves college town, small college towns, lives in a small college town, appreciates College Station for the wonder that it is. I think most people would prefer to live in Austin, so let's not go too crazy.
All I was saying was that
go ahead. I think I would take the Houston area geographical recruiting footprint over the one that's in Tallahassee.
Okay, well, that's fine. I will give you Houston 90 miles away versus Marianna 70 miles away. I will give you that.
Ari, do you think that so Jimbo at Florida State was able to get to the top of the mountaintop? They didn't really stay at the top of the mountain very long after that. Do you think that A&M's one of those that you can actually stay at the top of the mountain?
Well, I think they have to get to the top of the mountain first.
But in your vision of where A&M's going over the next 5 years, and I know you feel like they can get to the top of that, but can Jimbo keep it there?
I think it's going to be a lot harder to stay there in that conference than it would have been at Florida State. So the fact that he didn't do it at Florida State is a red flag. But I don't care where you are or what your team is or what conference you're in or anything that's on your helmet. If you recruit classes like the one they just signed last year, you are going to remain at the mountaintop to some degree.
You're
going to
break through.
I don't know. The question, I think, and I guess maybe this would be a good question for you, Max, is do you think that Texas A&M can recruit like that for five straight years? Because that's what it's going to take. Like, if Texas A&M signs the seventh best class in the 2023 cycle or the 2024 cycle now, it doesn't do what it needs to do. And I think people don't realize that. Like, having one really good class is important. There's no question about it. But if you can't sustain that over a four-year period, then you're still going to have some holes. So, like, is he situated to do that 4 years in a row?
Yeah, I think that one thing we've seen in Texas versus Texas A&M recruiting is, first of all, over the last decade, I'm not sure there's a program that has changed their situation in recruiting maybe more than A&M. Because it's easy to forget, before they went in the SEC, they were recruiting kind of more at a top 25 level. I mean, really, I'm not saying they didn't have this ceiling, but in terms of the best players in Texas, it was definitely not 50-50 with the Longhorns in terms of where those kids were going. And now it's 50-50 and then some in terms of A&M, which is a huge transformation in terms of, you know, owning your state or owning your share of the state. But I think it's like
what I said about Oklahoma in the episode on Friday. It's that the circle patch makes a difference, which, by the way,
it does.
Texas is getting the circle patch too.
But so, I think if Texas were ever to get very, very, very good, I think we probably could say A&M could still recruit at a top 10 level.
But I don't think A&M falls off. There's a huge difference between what they just did and number 10.
No, but I'm saying I don't think A&M would backslide into now we're signing a number 20 ranked class.
Right, they're not, other people going got back good. To what they were.
But
in
I
the
do
Big
think that backsliding to number 10 would be almost as detrimental.
But you'd call that backsliding. That would still be recruiting at such a high level that you're in that blue chip, you know, range in terms of having a chance.
Yeah, then they would have the worst class in their division.
There won't be divisions, but it won't matter.
You know what I mean? I mean,
I'm saying if people in A&M are getting pissed because their class is ranked 10th, that means they've come a long way.
Right. My favorite thing in the entire world was when Tennessee signed the number 10 overall class nationally 3 years ago, and it was number 8 in the SEC.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, I get
you know
point,
what?
Max.
Those players didn't stay, so you've got to hang on to it once you get those players.
That's take that page out of the Maryland playbook, too.
Hey, but, did people, so were you guys getting killed for this week? Or did Auburn fans come after you, or did they kind of shrug and say that's fine?
My mentions were dry.
Okay. I think Auburn fans agree with Ari on they the are mad at their administration as well. Nobody liked how Auburn's administration handled that, especially Auburn fan. I think they were embarrassed by that. And listen, Auburn people are very proud, and they're also proud of the way they handle things. That they're they don't like that their school handled this way. So I thought they were fine. The South Carolina fans, I thought, were fine, even though we were kind of hard on them. We're talking about Clemson blocking them. The Florida fans did not come at me at all for having them as low as I did. But I'm not surprised by that, because I think it's dawning on them that their job is kind of hard, that they just ran off another coach who had success before. And so, and that's why that's the part that blew my mind as the Texas fans were arguing with me. I'm like, guys, Texas and Florida are the same job. Mm-hmm. Like, what makes you think that this is good? Like, you chew up coaches and spit them out. Like, I know you're supposed to be good, and everything around you says you should be good. That's the same at Florida. For whatever reason, you're chewing up coaches and spitting them out. That's a problem.
But it's all relative to Randy, because when I ask you this, like, if you're talking about where you have Texas and Florida, you can rank them that way in terms of the SEC, but nationally, you're still ranking them very, very high, right? There's not that many other jobs outside the SEC that are better than those jobs.
Yeah, they're probably top 10 jobs nationally.
Right, right.
But the thing about
it is, you're not really trashing them, because you can't name that many jobs outside of the conference that you'd rather have.
Well, I think it came, the initial tweet was from the SB Nation site that covers Texas, Burn Orange Nation. And they said, you know, and this is the silliest thing, they told on themselves with what they said, because they're like, Texas has got to be the second best job behind Alabama. I'm like, well, okay, Alabama's not the best job. Georgia's the best job. So you're telling on yourself there already. But have you not watched what happened? I mean, what happened to Charlie Strong? What happened to Tom Herman? What happened in Steve Sarkisian's first year? Like, you just lost to freaking Kansas. You've lost to Kansas twice in 4 years. Like, this is not, I guess, twice in 5 years. It was Strong's last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this is not acceptable. And don't give me your comparison with Texas A&M's record, because Texas A&M plays in the SEC West. Like, that is so much more difficult than what Texas has been doing.
And what I did too with my rankings was that I ranked Tennessee lower than I think most people would have, because of that whole coaching spit them out and chew them out type thing. So, like, if you to stay consistent, like, Texas has
done
the same
thing. I gave Tennessee a bump because it feels like there's more competent leadership.
Yeah, I need one more year. But Texas is in a really tough spot. You know, the thing that too is that 5 years ago, maybe not five, we're getting old, guys. I had three drinks last night and I'm still hurting. I've reached that point in my life. But the thing is that Texas would have been the number one job in America on every list 10 years ago.
Absolutely. So I think I did the ranking for SI and I had it number one.
Well, all right. Why don't we live in the multiverse here for a second? End of 2013, if Saban takes Texas, what's the Texas job today? Number one? Top three?
Probably. Yeah.
Probably. Best case scenario, probably top three, but we're not living in the best case scenario.
But Saban didn't take this Texas job for a reason.
Right.
And one of the reasons is Alabama is probably a better job than Texas.
And, buddy, I was around for all that. Trust me, not a lot of alignment going on that week when they were trying to hire Nick Saban. It was a messy time.
Yeah. And here's
which
the
might
thing.
Be an indication of what's going on now.
And it's funny because Alabama got so aligned with Nick Saban almost out of desperation because they had no other choice at that point but to hire Nick Saban. And then when they hired him, he had them over a barrel so much that they had to give him everything he wanted. So Alabama's alignment came really through necessity more than anything else. And you kind of wonder, when will Texas hit that point where alignment is basically necessity? They haven't found it yet. There's not been that point. And look,
but when they had Powers and they had DeLost Dodds and they had Mac Brown, when you had that all right, you saw the potential.
Well, also Mac was the perfect person for the Texas job.
Sure.
Mac is the type of person who makes every single person he talks to feel like they're the most special person in the universe. Ari had his first experience in person with Mac Brown last year.
I got Mac'd.
And I told him, I was like, Ari, he does it to everyone. And I'm not saying that's not an insult to Mac Brown. It is a massive, huge character trait.
It's like a presidential level skill to have.
Yes. He is.
But it's actually not that complicated. It's just paying attention, looking somebody in the eye, and calling them by their name.
I'm not saying it's easy, but it is nice for him to
take the time to know who he's talking to when he's talking to so many people in a given day, to look them in the eye, to shake their hand, and to be warm, I think is a skill that people shouldn't do or shouldn't be able to do to the level that Mac Brown has mastered it. But a lot of coaches I talk to lack that skill in the other way, like all the way the other way.
And now imagine that your biggest donors are not just rich people, but billionaires. And they're used to being the single most important person in every room they walk into. I've talked to people who've coached at Texas about this very thing. And they say that is one of the more difficult things to navigate is if you make billionaire A feel more special than billionaire B feels, you're dead to billionaire B. And that's scary. Like Mac is so good at working people dealing with people. Dealing with people on a human level, they all feel special.
It's been described to me this way. I think it's probably true, Andy. Maybe you'd agree. One thing that helped Mac a lot in that time, beyond the interpersonal skills, is you have to be an empty nester in some ways too, because that's what he was at that time. And you have all this time to go on the golf trips with the all the very important people and make all the time in the world for those folks. And it's tough to do when you're a guy like Tom Herman that had young kids going on.
Yeah. And Charlie Strong had kids in high school at the time. And
you guys can all speak to this too, but like now that I'm in the father club with you guys, I could not imagine being a college football coach in this scenario.
I can't even
figure out whether I can go to brunch with a friend on Sunday, let alone go on a recruiting
trip. You definitely understand why these coaches, when they get older, they're like, I don't know my kids very well. It's like, yeah, because the time commitment they needed for their job, like I could see why that ends up being a big problem down the road.
And then I guess if you say, well, I'm making $9 million a year, the wife has to understand. But it does seem like a very big strain.
But the thing is, like in your relationship, Ari, both of you work. Her job is important too.
Mm-hmm. And more important.
Right. It's a different, that's always one of the interesting interpersonal dynamics in these coach marriages, because in a lot of cases, the wife is the breadwinner at first. Like she's making significantly more money than he is as he's trying to climb the ladder. And then at some point they switch and then she has to take care of everything essentially as he works a million hours a week and the money goes up. It's a weird deal. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know that most people could handle that lifestyle.
Yeah.
It would be an interesting series to like ask people like what they did for a living, like wives of coaches, what they did for a living while their husbands were GAs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I ran a Blockbuster. I'd write about that.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And I would say in probably 90% of the cases, she made more than he did.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
The funny thing I wanted to say before we change the subject is like we were talking about Mac Brown and like being personable and warm and inviting. We should do, and I don't know, it'd probably be too offensive with the position that we're in, but we should just do a top 10 robots in college football coaching because there are so many of them. Like, I don't know, like, is it offensive to call Nick Saban a robot?
But Nick Saban isn't a robot if you're important.
No, I know. But like, is it? I know. I've seen coaches that are robots 85% of the time.
And also,
and 15% of the time,
ask him a good question, will give you a great answer.
I know, but he has to be a robot to a certain extent in order to be this locked in and success 85% of the time.
He is very task oriented and planned out. He has an 18-month calendar where each day is planned out.
That's robotic.
Oh yeah, no, that's and I think that's part of his success. And I think Mac Brown is probably very different.
Mac Brown is Mac Brown 100% of the time with everybody.
But yeah. By the way, okay, so I listened to this SEC rankings podcast and many more where this has been a theme where Ari has thrown up his hands and be like, what the hell's going on at Texas? I can't, someone explain it to me, all that stuff.
Do you want to do it again, Max?
No, we don't have to do it again. I just want to say this. We talk through all these issues at Texas or all these, you know, gripes. At some point, do you think we should step back and say maybe Mac Brown is a top 25 head coach? Because Bruce and Stu don't put him on their list. They didn't last year.
Oh, Mac Brown gets better.
He'd be on my list.
Let me give you a list of coaches who get better in my eyes every year.
That's what I'm saying.
That their successors and successors can't get it together. Mac Brown, Pete Carroll, Gary Pinkel.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Pinkel was the god. Like, look at what Gary Pinkel did at Missouri.
But if you guys were
doing... They were amazing.
If you guys were doing your own coaching lists, though, how much would you take recruiting into account? Because it's like, I don't know how you could do a top 25 list of college coaches and then like ignore that Mac Brown in North Carolina is like one of, I think, 11 programs that have signed multiple five-star prospects.
So like, if you were doing your 25, you would leave off G5 coaches?
I don't know how I would do that, but I would make sure that I created a metric or a way to. Yeah,
you have to grade on a. You have to grade recruiting on a curve.
Yeah,
you have to grade recruiting based on. Are you getting the best players you can get?
I have said many times though that I would have a hard time hiring a very good G5 coach for a power program.
Because I asked you that, I asked you a hypothetical because maybe your 25 would just look like the team talent rankings, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like North Carolina finishes around 11, you know, 10.
Here's
so maybe
thing,
Mac Brown
right,
should be a 10 or 11.
I say this as someone who thinks Mac Brown is one of the best coaches in college football still. You got to get results with those players.
Yeah, no, I know. Last year was a disaster.
Last year weren't good enough.
Right. Right.
I was heartbroken. The two squads that were the Stars Matter squads for me last year, well, Georgia carried the flag, but then they won with a walk-on quarterback, so it canceled out. And then North Carolina and Texas were like my two horses, and North Carolina got their ass kicked in week one on a Thursday night, if you remember.
I remember that. Yeah.
And we don't need – I mean, Texas lost to Kansas, so like I don't know what we're doing here. But yeah, I think Max, my list would be a little bit easier, but it's just like, where do you start with that list? You start with Nick Saban and Kirby Smart and Dabo Sweeney, right? I guess Ryan Day, maybe, although he would be a little bit lower on my list than most others.
How about Kyle Whittingham?
Yeah, that's a hard one to do because like Kyle Whittingham would probably be a top 10 coach on my list, but he hasn't, I don't think he's even been anywhere near the galaxy, the top 25 in the recruiting.
But he's had an undefeated season.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where it would get tough, but I do think that you have to...
I think you would put Fickell in, but I imagine you probably wouldn't put many G5 coaches in if you were doing it your way with the way that you weight recruiting being, what, 80-90% of the job.
The problem with the G5 is that it is inherently possible or impossible for people like us to grade how they're doing as recruiters because a lot of the kids that they're recruiting don't have profiles, and the only thing that you can do is say, well, that team won 10 games, so he must have a great eye for talent.
Right.
You know, like there's no data
developing. You would have to have a team that wins 10 games where their best players are freshmen and sophomores. Like that would be a guy who recruits really well.
I might have put Sonny Dykes in with what he did at SMU. You know, some of the classes that he put together, and they've been flirting with 10 or 11 wins every year for the last few years before he left the TCU.
But this is the question that comes up. Like, this is why Jamie Chadwell is still at Coastal Carolina. He's been very successful there. He's been successful at three different levels. He's been successful at Division II, at FCS, and a Group of Five. But they're very hesitant to even talk to him about a big time Power Five job because he has never had to recruit at that level. Like, he's never been an assistant at that level. His guys have all been with him since North Greenville. And, you know,
but where do you think that he fits though, Andy? Like, if, like, to me, I feel like that guy would be the perfect next head coach for Purdue. Or okay, the perfect next head coach for a middle tier Power Five school. He's not going to take the,
I may have mentioned this to Jamie Chadwell. I think I have. If Jamie Chadwell really wants to be a high level Power Five head coach, the quicker way to do it would be go be a high level Power Five offensive coordinator right now, and he'd be a high level Power Five head coach next year if that offense was good.
Also, he'd probably double his salary if he was a coordinator.
Correct. SEC or Big Ten coordinator.
Yeah.
And he's got an offense that everybody wants to steal. Like, you go, you sign one or two good players in your year with the Power Five school as the OC. You run a good offense. You're a Power Five head coach the following year.
Yeah, I think his annual salary is $900,000. So high-level coordinators at those big-time programs are making $2 million.
The SEC is fairly, you know, that's a good coordinator right there.
Yeah.
Also, let's not forget, though, the guy lives in Myrtle. So
exactly.
He's having a great time. I'm sure. Well, and
that's what he told me when he had that conversation. I don't think he would mind this because he's talked about this in interviews, like in press conferences. He's happy. Like, his thing is, if it doesn't come, if they never call, I'm coaching football and living in Myrtle Beach and making more than I ever thought I'd make. Life's good.
Fair.
Also, watching them is, I think you can make the case that watching that team is the most entertaining team, or a top five most entertaining team just to watch football.
Yeah.
I think there's something to that. Like quality of life. It's like, would you rather be the head coach at Coastal Carolina and be a team that wins 10 games and has an awesome time in Myrtle Beach?
Brian
or would you rather
Harsin.
Be the head coach of Auburn?
Yeah. Be Brian Harsin right now.
They might leak pictures of you that don't exist out to the media. Like, I don't know. Like, but yeah, I don't know if the head coach's ego would be durable enough to do that, though. Even if you make more money, and even if you think it's taking a step back from being a head coach at a major college football program or major enough for it to be on ESPN a lot, you know,
we've seen it a couple times.
It's happened.
How many times?
Especially if you're doing well.
Joe Moorhead was an FCS head coach who became a Power Five coordinator. Dan Enos was a Group of Five coach who became a Power Five coordinator.
Garrick McGee quit on UAB to go work with Petrino at Louisville.
Yeah, so it's happened before, but Moorhead's the only one who wound up a Power Five head coach out of that, and then he got fired. Now, I would argue that Moorhead probably shouldn't have been fired when he was at Mississippi State, but we'll see what he does at Akron. He'll have a chance to prove himself again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is interesting to think about. That would be a hard thing to do if you're used to being in control. The other thing about Chadwell that I think is interesting is that staff is still together. You know, that group, that core group that he's had really across three different schools, and they haven't been picked apart. There have been guys who've been kind of number two in interviews for bigger jobs, but they haven't left yet. And I think, like, if Chad Staggs, their defensive coordinator, if he'd gotten another job, I think at that point, that's when Jamie starts to think about, all right, I don't know if this is going to be the be-all, end-all here, because I don't know if I can keep the band together. But as long as the band's together, and by the way, Chad Staggs, his wife, makes the best cookies maybe I've ever had. Like, on Thursdays, they give them out.
Wow.
If you're the offensive and defensive players of the game, you get a whole, like, container of them. Everybody else gets like one. So, great incentive to be the offensive
and defensive
players of the game.
The day
are you
going to
give us some details
on
these things or what? Like, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about Mac?
I will have to look at my story to give you the exact details. She would not get, Miss Kelly would not give me the recipe.
I was going to say, in this day and age too, Andy, if Jamie had taken a job this offseason, take Grayson with you. I mean, that's becoming a little more common now. Why not?
Yeah, I and the thing is, he's been fighting to keep Grayson there.
Sure,
you know,
totally.
There have been entreaties to Grayson, but he has stayed. Okay,
I'm surprised he didn't go to USC.
They're soft.
Believe it or not, tampering happens in this sport a little bit. I don't know if you guys heard about this.
Yeah, I think we have. So the cookies, soft Toll House type cookies, but ultra soft, like very pillowy soft. Mm. Instead of chocolate chips, crushed Oreos.
Okay, here we go.
With the Oreo cream in there too.
All right.
They are so good.
I'm a big incorporate Oreo into everything guy.
Yes.
So that 100%. I don't think I've ever had an Oreo within another cookie before. So I'm sweating right now.
I don't think
so,
I have either.
So yes, Ari, if you can make 3 sacks as part of Coastal Carolina's defense, then you would get a whole container of those cookies the following Thursday.
You know, back when I was a kid, and maybe this is when like the genesis of like when I knew I probably had to like not be a fat kid, was I remember distinctly when I was playing Pop Warner, and I wasn't a very good football player because I just didn't have the mean streak that you needed. But I remember this distinctly, and do you know how like you remember things when you like from your childhood that like make no sense, but you just remember them anyway?
Totally. Yeah.
I remember my dad grabbing me by the face mask on the sideline of a Pop Warner game and saying, if you sack the quarterback on this drive, we'll go get a Whopper after the game.
Wow.
Guess what? I didn't get the sack, but I still think we got the Whopper.
3 sacks. I would expect you to have 3 sacks.
Yeah. I think I recovered a fumble, but it wasn't because I did anything. It was because I was the nose guard and they fumbled the snap.
See, I was too fat to play Pop Warner, so I never even got to try.
Yeah, I remember being nervous every Saturday morning before the weigh-in.
Oh,
I feel like I was like right on the cusp.
I forgot they had weigh-ins for that.
Yeah, remember you had to like get on all your pads and go stand in line, and you'd get on the scale, thank you, ma'am, and then you would go play the game. And I remember like I was like 3 pounds away from the next level, and I was very bad at my level, and I would have been like completely annihilated if I went up a level.
We lived in the Keys from 2nd through 5th grade for me, and there was no Pop Warner in Key Largo at the time. There may be now, but there wasn't then. So we moved to Orlando right before 6th grade. I was 180 pounds in 6th grade. So there was no Pop Warner League taking me. There was not. I had to wait till high school if I wanted to play football, which I did.
Oh, boy.
So you got the Whopper anyway?
Yeah, I think that was like the poor. I think my dad would say that's
talk to your dad.
I was gonna say, is that one of those memories you really unpack it? You think maybe had a long term effect on.
Like, I think to myself, if I get a promotion, I'm gonna get a Filet-O-Fish. I didn't get the promotion, but I can still get the
Filet-O-Fish. Yeah. Maybe the rewards need to cost a little more. Maybe the fact that the rewards cost $1.19,
they're so accessible.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, for those who don't know, I'm very excited. We are going to have Ari's dad on the show at some point in about the next month. And it's going to be spectacular.
Wow. I don't even know if I should be on the show. I think that you should just interview him and I'll just stand in the corner. Like, I don't even know if the world's ready for this.
I think that's the way to do it. I think that's the way to do it. All right. So we've thoroughly dissected the Texas job and what's wrong with
everything. I don't know what tangent we ended up on there, but I enjoyed it.
Did we solve any? We didn't solve anything there.
You know, favorite thing about having Max on this show and being on the same show of like it happens on every podcast I've ever co-hosted with him is I just talked to him for an hour and I'm like, I don't even know what we talked about, but it was awesome. Like I know,
last time I did Stars Matter, we had like 5 things we wanted to talk about and I think we got to 2, right?
Yeah, I don't even think we got to 2. I think it was just like, what's wrong with Texas? And then an hour and a half went by and I'm like, holy shit, where are we? But yeah, it's always, you know, it's always good. I think we're doing okay.
What's wrong with Texas, though?
It's good to see you,
Max.
I think it's like, if you don't know how to do a Rubik's Cube, all you're doing is turning it for no reason. You're never getting anywhere closer.
I've never completed a Rubik's Cube.
So, I don't know how to do a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
So, if I had one in my hand,
we
just turn and turn and turn, and maybe someday we'll get there.
All we do is turn the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
My 12-year-old figured out 2 weeks ago. It's on YouTube, by the way. You can look on YouTube and they'll tell you the trick. So, perhaps Texas, you know, Chris Del Conte and Sark just need to look at YouTube and figure out the secret to the Rubik's Cube. And then that's it. And they're done. And they'll suddenly start winning 10 games.
I've been twisting the Texas Rubik's Cube for 5 years and I finally put it down. So,
but see that's the thing that it's not just that I'm the same way. And we had this discussion Friday. I'm sure Max remembers, about A&M. Ari's so high. Oh my A&M.
By the way, favorite moment of the pod was the moment when you could tell audibly, you could tell that Ari was in a corner and he was having to punch 2 people at once. And he did not like the feeling of being ganged up on. I really enjoyed listening to that.
He said it after the show. He's like,
I don't like being ganged up on when the other 2 people are very wrong.
Well, but the A&M thing, you were so excited about it. And I'm like, Ari, they haven't won a national title since 1939, despite having what would appear to be every single advantage. So if we're going to say that Texas all has this issue where we, you know, some mystifying thing that we can't really put our finger on that is causing the problem, A&M also has that.
I know, but I also think you have to recognize a change of the time. Like A&M right now is not the same A&M that it was 2 years ago.
It's
like there was
not
a transformation in the past year that we have
to acknowledge. It's not, and I think Texas will figure that out when they get in the SEC. Like Texas fans, when they get in the SEC and start meeting LSU fans and Alabama fans and Georgia fans and Florida fans, are going to be like, oh, this is different. They look at Aggies as equals, and we look at them as inferior, and maybe we're not the cool ones anymore.
But I'm not even talking about it in the context of Texas. I'm talking about it in the context of A&M. They've made an extraordinarily important leap in the past year.
But they haven't won anything of significance.
But it takes time. It's like they went to the grocery store and finally got nice ingredients. They got to cook it now. They haven't had these ingredients.
They found the Whole Foods?
Yeah, they went from Safeway to Sprouts. And they just got home with the grocery bag. So let them take the stuff out, put it away.
Let me say this to you.
Let Jimbo Fisher cook. That's the T-shirt.
I'll say this in your defense, Ari. I think this is something that you could have argued on Friday in backing A&M is, I think that, of course, sitting here today, we don't know what year Texas and Oklahoma will join the SEC. Let's say it's 25, right? Whatever. I think that A&M will initially enjoy an advantage that they've been in the SEC for a decade. And of course, that doesn't mean Jimbo's been the head coach for a decade, but they've been in the SEC for a decade and they have a strong, solid foundation now in terms of what they're doing. I think they will enjoy an advantage over Oklahoma and Texas. The question is, how long will they enjoy that advantage before Oklahoma is SEC Oklahoma or before Texas gets its act together or whatever? Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that, but I do think that that's something that as an A&M fan, you should feel good about today.
Yeah, I just don't know if we should be talking about A&M in the context of the old Big 12. Like they literally out-recruited Alabama this past year.
But the fact of the matter is they have done everything they need to succeed in the SEC.
For the first time this year, more than ever. They've recruited well in the past, but this is the first time they've signed a class that can compete with Alabama.
This is the first time they've had the number one recruiting class. But look, you know.
But the last 5 years have been so concentrated at the top. Only four or five teams have signed a class like this. That A&M went, not only joined that group, but like annihilated every. And by the way, this past week signed another five-star defensive lineman in that last year's class, which we haven't mentioned on the show. And I think they've got seven top 100 defensive linemen going into the program.
Yeah, nine in the last 2 years.
Yeah. So it's just like they're a different. They're becoming a different animal, and I'm just trying to show them the respect.
And to be clear, when I say what I said,
but Georgia didn't get over the hump, and we both.
Georgia had won the SEC three times in the century.
Yeah. I'm giving Texas A&M the Georgia benefit of the doubt because pretty soon they're going to be.
But Georgia had actually won the league. That's the difference.
Right.
I'm talking about roster construction.
I'm aware of that, but Georgia had done something with the roster.
I'm not going to neg Texas A&M for not doing something 4 years ago before they had the roster that they have now. If they go 4 years from now and they haven't won it, then I'll join your side of the equation. But now that they have an Alabama roster, they're going to get Alabama
results. As soon as they win, I'm on your side. But I'm just not going to jump to your side because
it's like speculating on stocks. You don't just invest when you're at the top. You invest in the corporation because you think their earnings are going to come there. You like their business plan. You like their model. You put your money in before the stock goes through the roof. Their first earnings report comes out. They crushed revenue and you make money. That's what I'm doing.
Ari's
I'm
investing in ice juice, Max.
I'm investing in the machine that will make crinkle cut fries extinct.
We'll be right back after these words.
Hey, I'm willing to give you guys my top 10 right now if you want to hear it.
Yes, let's hear it.
Listen to the pod. Okay. I'll go bottom to top here, okay? 10, shoestring, absolute trash. I've never had a good one. 9, I'm going to say steak fries. I used to really like steak fries. I must have just not had very good steak fries lately. If you can point me in the direction of the greatest steak fries, I'll go
next
have them.
Next time you're in Dallas, we'll take care of that for you.
Okay. All right. 8, wedges. Generally like wedges, so this is not a knock on them. I'll eat any of these from
I found
to
once
9.
I got to 8 or 7, it was all stuff I really
liked. They're all good.
Yeah.
7, I have curly fries because we don't eat Arby's very often. If I eat Arby's more often, I think curly fries would be higher. But I always like a curly fry. Okay. 6, standard McDonald's cut. I know, Ari. I'm sorry. Here, let me tell you, though. There's just too many restaurants that serve standard fries that are just not memorable at all. So the McDonald's are great, but there's just too many that just do very plain, bland, not memorable.
But you can say the same thing about every fry.
Of course. Of course. But, yeah. That's how I
feel. Okay.
5, crinkle. Okay. Crinkle's at 5. Okay. Is that reasonable? I think Oven had him 6.
Moving along.
I think that having crinkle fries.
Moving along.
Have you ever been to like a Houston's or like just like a solid American restaurant where like the entrees are like $18 to $20?
Yeah.
They always have tremendous fries and their fries. And it doesn't matter. It's not just Houston's. It's like restaurants in that. In that same realm.
Stonewood Tavern.
Yeah, stuff like that. Like, I don't know. Here, yeah, all those, like, those fast casual joint, or those American chain restaurants that are a step above Chili's, but not quite nice. You know what I mean? Where you could still go.
Almost there. Jay Alexander's in the
South. Jay Alexander's is the perfect example of what I'm talking about. And they always have these, like, garlic seasoned American. It's like, how you could possibly put crinkle cut fries above a regular fry is, like, blasphemy to me. My point is
there's just too many restaurants that just have a frozen bag of standard fries and they don't really do much to them to dress them up, and I'm saying they're dragging down the regular
fries though.
There's not one restaurant
you walk yourself into that one, Max.
There's not Raising Cane's or any other restaurant where you actually like the crinkle cut fries.
No, Cane's would be better if they had better fries. It's interesting because the chicken finger restaurants, for the most part, all serve crinkle cut fries.
Yeah.
I want to say because the OG Guthrie's did it back in the day.
I will definitely acknowledge there's a real variant. I mean, bad crinkle fries are you know, belong at the bottom of the list. But good ones, I think you guys just need to have.
But I think all the crinkle cut fries taste the same.
Yeah. Okay. That's
fine. I think if you took the Runza fries and you put them in a Raising Cane's box, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference. And I pride myself on being able to like look at something and know what restaurant it came from.
Okay. That's fair. I'll give you that.
But like, you know what? I'm sorry. We just don't like the same thing. And I don't want to like, I feel like I'm coming at you a little bit too hard.
No, that's okay. I expect it. So I have crinkle 5. You guys act like I have it number 1, but it's number 5. Forest tater tots.
My 1 though.
Forest tater tots. Tater tots, you can make a case for number 2 though. I mean, great tater tots are.
I'm a big tot guy.
Yeah. 3 seasoned fries. I haven't had the Checkers Rallies ones. I think like Popeyes comes to mind here. 2, I would say fresh cut, which I know, Andy, that was your number 1.
Yeah.
For me, like the guiltiest pleasure of them all, and I rarely do it, is the brown bag of Five Guys fries.
Oh, I love those.
And it's just one of those like, oh, this is way too many fries. I shouldn't eat them all. Oh,
and
crap,
I'm going to eat them all. Yes. I will have a large.
Andy and Max, before the show.
By all means, fill up the bag and I will eat them all.
I told you guys that I forgot to rank a fry and I was embarrassed by it.
Yeah, what is
it? The natural cut fries like at a Steak Escape or at a Charlie's Steak, you know, the, like Andy
that was my number
about.
One.
I should have been on my list and I'm embarrassed to say that.
The Five Guys fry and
them.
The Steak Escape fry is the same fry.
Yes.
Sure.
It's just like off of a potato, they slice it, freshly put it in the fryer. Yes. Yeah, that should have been in my top 5 and I didn't rank them at all, and that was an oversight, not an intentional thing.
The fresh cut, Andy, do you ever do the Cajun at Five Guys or do you just keep it
normal?
Oh
yeah. No, I'll do the Cajun ones.
Yeah, those are good.
Yeah, no. And the thing is like that was when I worked in the mall, I'd hit those places, never cared about the sandwich. Sometimes we'd just skip the sandwich and get more fries.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. That's
hey,
fair.
Max, how far were you away from Omaha? Are you like 45 minutes an hour?
50 to 60 minutes, yeah.
Okay, I got a Checkers location for you. I'm going to text it to you right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting, okay.
And it would be, Andy, how far would you drive for French fries?
Not that far.
Oh, no, I would.
No, we'll be up there in a couple days.
One time I drove from Tucson to North Scottsdale for lunch, and it was
That's a long way.
Yeah, and I drove back.
2.5 hours?
Yeah. I was like, I want to go there for lunch, and it's 10:15. I got there at 12:30, ate lunch, and then turned around and drove back to Tucson.
But I will tell you a Checkers story. So do either of you remember the name Joe Cohen?
No.
Joe was a big-time recruit, played offense and defense at Palm Bay High School in on the Space Coast of Florida. Came to Florida as a running back. The Checkers on University Avenue and 34th Street, that location, made him a defensive tackle. He started as a defensive tackle on the 2006 national title team. thanks to Checkers. If anybody ever deserved an NIL deal, it was Joe Cohen and Checkers. Because that man loves some Checkers.
What's the order at Checkers, by the way, if I'm going?
You just get like they I haven't been in years, but they had
a big Buford and a fry.
Yeah, they basically had a burger that was similar to the McDonald's Quarter Pounder, and you'd get that. And
big then, Buford.
And the fries, yeah, okay. Exactly.
All right. Yeah, fresh
but you
cut
might
too.
Just go get the fries, and just it's like a life experience.
That'd be okay. I have waffle one, I think.
Yes.
And you got to understand, until I moved to Austin in 2012, I'd never had Chick-fil-A. We didn't have that. We didn't grow up around Chick-fil-A. So
right, because it had not expanded that far yet.
Yeah, it spread so much now. The Chick-fil-A waffle fry for me is that's I think
it's
that's
the best fry on the face of the earth.
Yeah,
I'm not saying fry. In terms, yeah, we're not talking about restaurant.
But I feel
fries,
like if you remove Chick-fil-A from the equation, the waffle fry would be pretty obsolete. Like I think that Chick-fil-A
is had some good waffle fries at other bars.
I don't think they're very common. I don't encounter them in the wild very often unless I'm at Chick-fil-A, and they're good. I mean, every fry that's potato that's deep fried is good, but I don't know that I encounter them enough in
now.
In
Andy,
the
when
world.
When you're air frying, what do you buy for frozen?
I don't do a lot of fries.
Don't do a lot of that. Okay.
No, I don't like fries at home. Like okay. It's not something. As an amateur, I feel like I should be doing, like, give me a dunk tank with boiling oil, drop them in there, and fry them correctly. That's what I want. So
I've done fries pretty good in an air fryer, though, if you're trying to.
Yeah, they're not bad. Tots hold up pretty well in the air fryer, too.
Tots hold up a lot better.
Yeah.
But the fries aren't bad. They're crispy, and they are obviously better for you than the ones dunked in the oil, but they don't.
Sure.
They don't feel the same.
The thing about the Checkers fry that you, when you eat it, you'll have to, they're very greasy.
Mm, okay.
So if you like grease, I mean, some people, like I took my fiance through there and she's like, I don't like it. It's too greasy, which was a long list of food opinions. That
and
we
yet,
don't see eye to
and
eye
yet
on.
The wedding's still on. So yeah. that's fantastic.
Not quite a deal breaker.
I was like, cause she loves French fries. Like that's her thing. So, like, we were driving to Houston, and there's a Checkers between Dallas and Houston, and I said, have you ever had a Checkers fry before? And she said, no. And I'm like, I am about to blow your mind. You love French fries? And she was pregnant at the time, and the only thing that she ate when she was pregnant was sweet potato fries. So I thought, let's try this out here, and if you only want to eat one, then you only have to eat one. And I have a video on my phone of her being disappointed by it. And it's like, it was the worst, it was top 10 worst moment of my life.
It does suck when there's something you truly love and you want to share it with someone you love.
I just don't know how somebody can eat that and be like,
it's okay. I'm bad at overselling in those situations and setting someone up to fail. Now,
there's two things that I fail at, Max, when it comes to like getting my fiance to agree with me on something. That's food opinions and comedy. Like we can't see eye to eye. Like we have the same... like sense of humor when we're in the world, but like I can't get her to laugh at a Family Guy clip. I can't get her to laugh at some of the stand-up that I like, and it just like I get so excited. I try to. Have you guys seen Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis?
Yeah, I tried
to get her to watch that the other night. Didn't even smile, and I'm just what are we doing here?
My wife and I have very good TV and movie compatibility.
We have great movie compatibility, but it's all drama. Like we watch all the drama shows together, and we have great Netflix chemistry, but we don't. Watch comedy very like Letterkenny and all the things that I watch, like Family Guy and you know Curb Your Enthusiasm, like all the things that most guys watch, like never with her.
Well, see, yeah, my wife and I have very good comedy compatibility as well. We speak in movie quotes.
Yeah.
So we speak in Spaceballs and Dumb and Dumber and Zoolander quotes in our house. Like that's why when the Texas fans came at me for saying that Texas, which chews up and spits out coaches, is not the best job in the world, I posted the Mugatu clip that I feel like I'm taking crazy pills because that is spoken in our house once every 2 days, at least.
Now, one time I tried to grab Britt's hand and she pulled it away and said, Harry, your hands were freezing. And I was like, okay, we're good.
Yeah, mine is a massive Dumb and Dumber fan. So I did, before we go... want to talk about something that Max wrote last week, and it
wait,
does.
What happened to the actual topic?
The
of this
whole
podcast?
Topic of the entire
totally
podcast
just
is just gone.
Gone. It's okay, but it's okay because I did want to talk about the Texas fans' reaction to our rankings because I thought that was interesting, and this ties into this as well because this involves Texas and Oklahoma at the moment We'll see. But Max wrote about the potential Big 12 divisions, which this the entire topic, speaking of, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Yeah. This entire topic drives me crazy because I don't understand why these conferences haven't gotten together and gotten the rule completely changed so that they don't have to have divisions if they don't want to. Like the rule now, because they changed it, they tweaked it for the Big 12, and I think the ACC helped out with this too. Before, you had to have at least 12 teams split into two divisions. That was the only way to stage a championship game. Then they changed it to, if you play a full round robin, you don't have to have divisions. Well, they're all going to get rid of divisions soon because you'll not want divisions because you'll want the highest ranked champion to make the playoff. So they're all going to have them changed. So why didn't the Big 12 just go to the other leagues and be like, hey, can you co-sponsor this with us so we can just knock this out and not have this stupid rule anymore? And we don't need divisions and can have a 1-versus-2 championship game like we have been doing.
Yeah, this is a topic that, you know, we're kind of getting, you know, we're 15 months away from the new Big 12, and the new Big 12 is 14 members at this point in time. So they're kind of in that process now, having to figure out how this is actually going to work, you know, starting in 23. And, you know, they're going to meet next month in Phoenix and try to hammer this issue out of what's the divisional setup, or do we need divisions? And that certainly could be the takeaway. You know,
but they have to rely on getting it changed at the NCAA convention next year,
getting a waiver and then getting it changed. Yeah.
And then, cause you got to have a schedule.
Right. And so they've looked at three different models for, you know, for divisions and the kind of the difference in the models from what I've been told is kind of, what do we do with Texas and Oklahoma? Do we put them in the same division or different divisions? And that's kind of the interim problem. Obviously you got to figure out, but I'm with you, Andy. Like, I think the Big 12, the best move is the 1-versus-2 in terms of trying to, especially if we're stuck with the 4-team playoff. I think you do want your conference title game to have your two best teams, and you can't do that and have divisions, really. I mean, it's not fair. So, I think that probably the most logical thing would be to not have divisions and try to work out fair schedules and protect rivalries and all that. But if you're interested to see what they feel like they have to do as in terms of making it, you know, is 14 a little bit too unwieldy in terms of the scheduling without divisions?
If you're going for maximum spite, do you put Texas and Oklahoma in separate divisions and then be like, oops, we couldn't schedule you against one another. Sorry.
You know, when I did the Big 12 survey, I asked them and, you know, how much they cared. And among the Texas and Oklahoma, you know, I asked Big 12 fans, should they be in the same divisions or different divisions? And the Texas and Oklahoma fans voted for same divisions. So I don't know if that's just the comfort level of, we've done that before in the South. And maybe that makes the Red River game matter more.
It's also the Iron Bowls like that. Michigan, Oklahoma, or Michigan, Ohio State is like that. You know, those are in division games. So I get where they would feel that way. I think,
I mean, that's a normal thought, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. Because while I'm sure they enjoyed playing against one another twice that year where they played for the Big 12 championship,
yeah.
I think just beating the other team on the field and maybe that being the reason why one of them played for the championship and the other one didn't, probably going to feel pretty good for the winner.
Sure. I can tell you, I think folks in the Big 12 do not want to see Texas and Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game ever again.
Well, then you make them individually, but then both of them too. Then you throw them in the same division, so you avoid that completely.
Well, they can just do what the Big Ten did and just make up some weird rule that, you know, at the end of the actually, the Big Ten championship is between the third and fourth best team in the country.
The Whataburger and the Hy-Vee divisions.
That's, you know, I asked it, is Legends and Leaders on the table? It sounds like it's probably not. I think that we just can leave that one in the past, but. Yeah, the branding part of it, because it's not a very naturally north-south thing. I mean, it could be if you just want to have the super loaded Texas division, which I don't think they really want to do.
Could you go east and west, like east of I-35 and west of I-35?
That may be the way they do it.
I just don't know why you would bother with geography in a world where geography is completely irrelevant now.
I mean, that's fine, and this is temporary.
Because geography is ruining the Big Ten.
Well, it is. And again, this is another reason why the Big Ten shouldn't have divisions either. The ACC should. The
but then
ACC
again, everybody in the Big 12 recruits Texas anyway, so who cares?
Had two teams in the playoff.
Like in the Big Ten, you've got a team that's in New Jersey and Maryland and another team that's in Iowa. So like that that is a little bit more drastic. But like in the Big 12, how many teams, I mean, maybe not the new Big 12 with, you know, Cincinnati and UCF and those guys, but like everybody in the Big 12 recruits Texas anyway. So maybe it makes less of a difference.
And they want to be, and they want to feel like they still have that access. So it is important. They may, if they do divisions, they may split the four Texas teams, you know, going forward into two different divisions, just so everyone feels like they get to play their games in the state of Texas and helps them in recruiting.
Now, Max, I'm curious. Somebody asked me this the other day, and I don't know the answer. I've talked to people with Texas and Oklahoma, and I don't get a sense that any of them feel any sort of confidence that they get out of the Big 12 early. You know, it seems like everybody's sort of settled on it could be 2025 before they join the SEC. But
as one AD told me, no one really wants to show their cards at this time.
Yeah, but that's what I'm wondering. Could this become cumbersome to a point where reasonable people decide they want to come up with a reasonable number?
The reasonable, from my understanding, I think that one way that could expedite it would be basically ESPN intervention. You know, I think that we can't have that.
They got mad about that. The perceived intervention last time that ESPN
denied. You've got some interests there, Andy, because you've got you get the SEC network. You need to unwind Longhorn Network. Could they be the ones that make the money right for?
Well, you also have the new ESPN SEC deal starting in 2024.
Yep,
as opposed to 2025.
Some interest there. Sure.
Yeah, the new Big 12 deal starts in 2025. So, yeah, I do wonder if they get tired of it. And I know feelings are still very raw in this situation. But I will say they seem to be handling it. The Big 12 people do seem to be handling it more maturely than maybe I would have in their shoes.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, and from everything I've heard, the 12 working together, it's been as you'd expect, it's been good relations so far among kind of going forward with those members. One point that was made to me last fall that I don't know, maybe we kind of didn't maybe fully understand the point when this was all hitting the fan, Andy, but. We throw around it's going to cost $80 million in terms of an exit fee. It's going to cost way more than $80 million because you can't really put a price on actually locking up their grant of rights for that period of time. The actual value of this is way more than $80 million.
Well, if that's the case, nobody's going anywhere.
Right.
There's no number you come to that they're going to be willing to pay rather than just wait another year.
To get the rights back. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Who knows? It's not at this point. It's just kind of a staring contest.
It's crazy because, as someone pointed out to me, who'd worked with the Big 12 or worked at a Big 12 school, nobody had been in their old league more than one full calendar year after saying they're going where they're going. This is going to be more than 3 years.
You saw Conference USA last week get their stuff all figured out because it's uncomfortable. You don't want to hold people hostage.
Yeah, it is amazing, but I understand where the Big 12 is coming from. You want to milk this for all it's worth. If you can make them give you a bunch of cash, then great. I don't know that it's worth it for Texas and Oklahoma to do that. So you just have to figure it out. The SEC, I guess, has to. It can stay in divisions until it doesn't need to be in divisions anymore. I know they're already talking about what the next thing will be. And I think it's the three fixed opponents, and then everybody else rotates through twice every 4 years.
But ACC did it in 20, right? They did without divisions in 20,
and right? And two teams made the playoff,
from
the ACC. So it's common sense. The Big Ten should be going to this. The ACC should be going back to it. The SEC will be going to this at some point when Oklahoma and Texas get there. So if you're the Big 12, if you could figure out a way and be sure that you're not, that you can get that rule pushed through, then I think you do. And you go divisionless, and that way you don't have to stress about it. But unless you know you can get it pushed through, you do have to stress because you got to have schedules made. I guess you could do contingency, make schedules either way.
Yeah.
But
and it could be that they do divisions in the 14 setup, and then they, you know, a couple years pass, and then they can revisit this and get rid of divisions.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, when the Big Ten comes out, whenever that is, and says we're doing away with divisions, which I mean they certainly should, as Ari pointed out, then the Big 12 can be like, ah, we're following suit.
Ari, how would you feel about getting some Ohio State, Michigan Big Ten title games? You wouldn't love it, would you? You want the big game to feel as important as possible.
I can't be the, if we expand the playoff, we're watering down the regular season guy, and then also be like, yeah, I love rematches. So, like, I think I've got to stay consistent with that. And I personally don't know.
Boy, that Duke-North Carolina third matchup of the year was so terrible. Oh, wait, no, it was freaking awesome. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I know. Go ahead. It's a great sport. Can we talk about football now?
I believe there's another level of football where teams frequently play three times in the same year, and it works out okay. So
they're all built differently than college football, and I don't know where I'm at with rematches. And I think that every single time there is one, I want to watch it, so maybe that's just the answer. But I think there's something special to the fact that Ohio State had to cry and go home, and it's their season was over. Like, you think Michigan wants to play them again the following week? That'd be bullshit. Like, they beat them. You know, I don't know. Like, that's just my mentality. So I don't know.
That's what Florida State said my freshman year.
Yeah. He's got a retort for everything, this guy.
They're like, oh, no, we shouldn't have to play him again. Yeah. You want to know why? Because the final score is 52-20 in the second game.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get it. And if you're I think that they should, the two best teams should play. And if they happen to play in the final week of the year, the regular season, and, you know, if that's the way it works out, then that's the way it works out. Then, like, I don't hate it. You know, I would, everybody on the face of the earth would have watched a rematch between Ohio State and Michigan 2 weeks later or a week later.
I'm not sure Ohio State would have won that.
I mean, I don't know.
Given the way Michigan beat them, I'm not sure Ohio State would have won. I mean,
conventional wisdom would say, hey, they're playing in a dome and they figured it out a week later. And
I'm not sure they were blocking Hutchinson and Ajabo a week after that.
Yeah, just got their ass kicked.
Yeah, butt kicking happen in domes too sometimes.
No, I think that Michigan would have probably won again, because you can't beat a playoff team like Michigan when you're soft, and Ohio State was soft last year. So, I don't know if I feel particularly passionate about it. I do think that the divisions are kind of stupid. But at the same time,
it's just frustrating with the Big
Ten.
They're
not created equal. That's why, in that conference. Right, and that's the conference I covered for so long. So yeah. I see Iowa, Nebraska, and Wisconsin, and Northwestern, and these teams on the other side of the conference. Like, okay, well, the other side of the conference gets access to all the good players, and they're just like, well, I guess we're just going to recruit Southern Illinois and hope that we can beat Philly and Maryland and Pittsburgh and Columbus and Cleveland and Cincinnati. It's just not fair. So, but then again, I don't know that changing the division is going to put Iowa in a better position to land.
Right. I don't know that Pittsburgh makes, because I would argue that Iowa has had probably the best chance of the West teams of winning.
Well, it's fine to be in the Big Ten. Like, West,
Michigan State had to go on that 17 play drive in 2015 to beat Iowa.
The thing about that, the way it's set up, though, is that it's not the Big Ten West that's paying the consequence. It's teams like Michigan State and Penn State that have to beat Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State all in the same year. It's just not fair. So,
but if you had two Big Ten East teams in the title game pretty much every year, how do the West programs ever start to recruit at that level and keep up with them?
Well, I mean, how long has the Big Ten had divisions now? And how, like, many of the Big Ten West teams have risen from the ashes to recruit better. Like, I don't know that. Sometimes I feel like it's so easy. I'm not saying you're doing this, Max, so don't take it that way. But, like, I do think that it's easy to see, well, this one change is going to lead to a dramatic impact on thing B. And a lot of times it just doesn't work out that way. Like,
yeah, I got you.
I mean, how many times has Wisconsin been in the Big Ten championship game and they've signed one top 25 class in the history of their program? It's just like, what is it going to take for them to sign a top 10 class? I don't know I don't know if they ever will. And I don't know if the divisions or the alignment or how many times they play Ohio State in the same season or whatever. I don't think there's anything that you
could
do.
The divisions aren't the thing holding them back.
Yeah. What are you going to do to change that? Yeah. Like, I don't even know if there is an answer.
Because, you know, you look at the SEC and they've had two periods where one division has completely dominated the other one. You know, the first 10 years of the SEC championship game, more or less, the winner of the Florida Tennessee game, which was usually week three, won the league. Like that was the de facto SEC championship game, and the West just couldn't get it together. And then the West gets it together, and the East is just irrelevant for however long, really until Georgia won in 17. So you have these runs, and I don't think they're good for the league, where it feels like one side is just completely... Because then, you know, with and I realize that's not actually helping Wisconsin or Iowa or Nebraska or Minnesota win the Big Ten title. But it doesn't feel like one side is just shunted off if they just, they're one through
four. Yeah, and now we're back to everybody love everybody. The Andy Staples' view on college football, everybody gets a hug.
It's not a hug. It's that everybody plays each other.
Everybody feels included.
Yes.
And equal.
Yes.
When they're not. Yeah.
Not equal. Here's the thing. I don't know how what is it? How long have they been playing college football now? 150 years? 151 mm-hmm. years? Like, if anybody thinks that it's equal or ever was equal or ever will be they're delusional. But to be engaged is not the same thing. Like, Minnesota fans don't go into the season thinking we're going to win the national championship. They go into the season thinking, hopefully we'll have a good year and maybe beat Wisconsin.
Why are we changing
the postseason for that?
I recognize what you're saying, that it's not. Yeah,
because if they made the playoff, it would be even more special.
But they're only thinking about those two things, so they could still achieve those in the current system.
But then they could also be like, well, maybe we'll make the playoff if we have a really good year. Maybe we'll make the playoff.
Yeah, I think that was kind of my point. Is like, at least if you have the opportunity to win the West and go into, like, I know Iowa got whipped in the Big Ten title game, obviously. And does that change recruiting dramatically? No, obviously they got a 5-star afterward, but, and that was great for them. But like, I think that being able to A, win the division, and B, in some years have access to the Rose Bowl or a really good bowl game just by winning that division, at least does help your program, you know, hang with them to the best of your ability. Not to say you can get over on Ohio State or anything, but at least keeps
you there. A 12-team playoff in a divisionless Big Ten, Wisconsin does make it some years. Iowa does make it some years.
Yeah.
And like, that's a big freaking deal.
But part of that would also be your division scheduling, which if you're taking that away, then it's going to get harder to get there.
It is, but they're going to have years where they can beat Ohio State in the regular season or beat Michigan State in the regular season. It's not going to be every year.
Yeah, once every 20 years.
I mean, we saw Iowa crush a pretty good Ohio State team in 2018.
Yeah, that was their year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe Purdue also beat Ohio State one time.
I believe they did.
I think they're all just going to take turns. We've been through this before, I guess. But
well, they're going to expand the playoff. It's just, you know.
Yeah, and it'll be fun when they do it.
So.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. We have
what are you
going to
title
problems?
This podcast? I mean, this is fun. I enjoyed it.
What's wrong with Texas?
Part how about eight? Grab ass with Max Olson?
I like that too.
This is just like leftovers out of the fridge. It's good though. I enjoyed it.
But we had an idea going in. I wanted to bring up the reaction from the Texas fans because it was pretty forceful. So, you know, conflict creates good audio. And there was some conflict there.
And think about everything we covered. We covered cookies with Oreos in it,
mm-hmm.
Checkers, French fries,
comedy compatibility,
wives supporting their loser GA husbands.
That's right.
You know, there's a lot happening. And then all the college football stuff too. And we got a little snippy at the end.
Cookies and cream cookies. I mean, why isn't that not a standard
thing
at a cookie
shop?
That's
when I ate one. I was in Chad Stagg's meeting room, and he's like, you want one? I was like, hell yeah, I want one. When I ate one, I was like, why have I never thought to do this? I don't know.
It should be standard.
I found a recipe. She wouldn't give me the exact recipe. I found a recipe in an old Southern Living, or on the Southern Living website, very quickly after that. So it's doable. It's definitely doable. But yeah, we'll have to make those. Maybe when we go to your dad's house, Ari, and interview him for the podcast, maybe I'll bring some baking supplies and make some cookies.
Yeah, you should bring some baking supplies and make us that macaroni and cheese, man.
I could do that. The Clarkston Union, Union Woodshop mac and cheese.
I was watching this thing on, it's funny that you mentioned the cookie and cookie, Max. I was watching this thing on YouTube where there was this big, or not YouTube, but Instagram, where this guy was in Jersey and there was this big slice of pizza, a triangle slice, and the toppings were little miniature slices of pizza. And I'm like, that's like, I would eat that.
That's like Inception.
Yeah, that's what cookie and cookie.
I will say, though, I needed to be better at Instagram. Once I have my six pack, then I'll just post more on Instagram. But
oh boy,
I've been
wait, hold on. You're the man of food pictures, and you're saying you should be better at Instagram. We want food pictures. We don't want your six pack.
I haven't traveled as much, and I'd much
rather watch what you're look at what you're eating for lunch than what happened to your body because you stopped.
Well, not right. I'm not aiming the six pack pictures at you, Ari. Come on now.
Wow. Yeah,
so, but I have somehow, like, in my scrolling of Instagram, I have wound up in Butcher Instagram down that rabbit hole. Have you guys gone to Butcher Instagram?
Yeah.
Like, it's basically a bunch of German butchers cutting Wagyu cattle. Like, it's,
you know,
crazy.
What's funny, if you go look at Instagram and you click on the Explore tab on the bottom, it tells you who you are as a human.
Dude, all right, let me ask you this. I am getting absolutely bombarded with dad content now, and it all works on me. Are you getting this too now?
No, I get Ari, stretchy athletic wear. Content? That's what I get.
Okay. I get retro Jordans, watches, diet food, poker chips, pizza, and like sports, and that's it.
This is by the way. Remember when Ari read off his
and sports cards? Look
his
at this.
Google search history randomly a few episodes ago.
Yeah,
and we decided we were going to make it a regular segment. We're going to make it. Ari reads off either his Google search history or his Instagram Explorer.
Explorer is a great. It is a great assessment of what Instagram thinks you are. I got a lot of food. I got a lot, like movie clips. A lot of food. Man, a lot of food.
And my Google search history is kind of weird.
A lot of beer, too.
I'm looking at it right now.
Uh-oh. All right, what we got?
Thad Mata.
Okay.
Checkers, locations, Nebraska.
Wait, no, we understand that one.
Jimmy Chadwell. Yep. What is epoxy? Garage floor coating, Dallas.
Epoxy was the Wordle the other day. Is that why?
I got it wrong.
Yeah.
I got it wrong because, and I had three more guesses to go, and I just saw the APO. And I couldn't even get another. I couldn't even get wrong guesses. I was so stuck. I had to Google what is the answer, and then epoxy came up, and I didn't. I've never heard that word in my life. And then a week later, Britt wants me to look into what it would be like to get one of those gel coats in our garage door.
Of course.
Best pizza in Atlanta.
That would be Antico.
Near I'm going IKEA to Atlanta next Georgia weekend Tech. To see a stand-up comedian.
You want to go to you'll want to go to Antico.
Antico.
Okay,
good. Oh, Max and I have been there. That's right. I'm a Butcher Instagram right here. Lots of heavily marbled meats.
Nice. I get a lot of smoked barbecue on here too.
It's that, and the ads are for stretchy athletic wear that I've never bought for some reason.
Also, there is one account I started following because I was getting so much of it that was like fast food hacks. I feel like I probably should send that to you guys because that's just extremely up your alley.
Well, like our friend on Twitter who sent us the Culver's burger with the fried cheese curd patty atop the burger. That apparently is going to come back here in the next month or so. So we may have to have another Andy Staples Show taste test.
I like that.
I think we can do it. We need to regularly schedule these things. Whatever the creative minds at Arby's and Burger King and McDonald's want to come up with, we can test them out for you.
I did drive by Arunza today, and they had a sign up saying they have a fish sandwich. So maybe I'll report back to you guys on that one.
Somebody said to try the Popeyes fish sandwich.
Yes, I heard it's flounder, which sounds pretty awesome. So
it sounds like they do it similar to their fried chicken sandwich, though. It's just with the
is it almost gone? Because I believe it's they serve it during Lent. Which makes sense. That's a population.
I'm still getting texts about that podcast.
Yeah, that wants fish sandwiches during Lent. So
yeah,
yeah.
I wish you would have had it fresh.
I just want a crunchy fish sandwich, Ari, and it's your favorite.
Ari, is a very about the soft fish sandwich. Is that you can eat it without chewing.
All right. Ari's going to swallow some more fish sandwiches without chewing. Max and I are going to get some work done. It has been a pleasure. Tuesday, Austin Meek will join us. We're going to wrap up Michigan spring football. He's going to explain why Ari's favorite quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, did not do much throwing this spring.
I'll be listening to that.
Yes. And the state of Michigan with new coordinators, with Jim Harbaugh back, where there was a moment where we didn't think that was going to happen. It's going to be very, very interesting. Talking Wolverines on Tuesday.